Hello, this is Chris with the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, May 19th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page, Mental Health Awareness Month, Ready to Recover. McLean County Jail's Reset Program goes beyond standard inmate services. From Bloomington. Due to a lack of specialized staffing, the McLean County Jail's Inmate Services Department looks significantly different 10 years ago. Jackie Mathis, Director of Inmate Services and Behavioral Health at the jail, said the primary responsibilities of this department were to notify detainees of their court dates, report their bond amounts, and explain whether there were housing options available once they were released. But since then, the jail has hired two mental health counselors, a full-time substance abuse counselor, a reentry case manager, a commissary manager, and assistant, and a jail chaplain. So we've expanded inmate services to be more of an overall holistic behavioral health approach to the program. To recognize these changes, staff last year renamed the inmate services program the Recovery Education Support and Reentry Team, or RESET. One participant said he has been in and out of jail for most of his adult life, but after asking around about the RESET program, he realized there were detainees who really wanted to better themselves and weren't just waiting to regain their freedom. He credited the RESET program for working with individuals to address the problem of addiction, which he described as the root of many issues. "I've wanted to be better for the ones around me that I love, but the RESET program made me realize how I need to want it for myself first." When an individual first arrives in the McLean County Jail, they typically meet with Kara Powell, a reentry case manager, to determine what resources they might need while in custody and what resources they'll need once they're released. Should this not occur within the first 48 hours of detainment, an inmate's needs are determined by a mental health and substance abuse assessment, which must be performed within the first 14 days of an inmate's detention. When it comes to addressing mental health issues, another participant said RESET offers calmer solutions to those experiencing a crisis. For instance, if an inmate is having a mental health breakdown, one of the RESET ladies will drop everything to just come talk to the man or woman instead of having a bunch of officers intimidate the person and making the situation worse. Additional courses include moral recognition therapy, which helps inmates guide themselves using their moral compass, and substance abuse counseling. Mathis said there is also a recovery pod in the jail special needs behavioral health unit, which is meant to support detainees in substance abuse problems. One resident of the recovery pod said he spent the first couple weeks of his incarceration in one of the pods. Most of that time was spent praying for a miracle. Although he was already focused on his recovery from behavioral health issues, he said his transfer to the recovery pod put him in a perfect environment to get better. All of a sudden, AA meetings were happening and more, which led to us all starting to change, the detainee said. It felt great to see like-minded people all around me. RESET participants can also be involved in growing herbs and vegetables in the resident garden. Mathis said the garden has been in place for 2 years and has been very helpful for detainees suffering from mental health issues. Individuals who may have had a poor visit or a bad day in court can be outside and tend to the garden. It also provides an opportunity for group sessions and counseling to be conducted outside. That's one of those things that was helpful in ways we didn't realize. Mathis said resources are available even for inmates with the most severe mental health issues. The jail recently had to make special accommodations for a detainee from Joliet who had severe mental illness. That was a very coordinated effort to put together a bag of commissary and clothes and things, and then get him a train ticket and coordinate with his family upon his release. As inmates approach their release date, they are given a packet of materials to help them reintegrate into the community. Included in these packets are 2 doses of Narcan with instructions on how to administer it in the event of an opioid overdose, a map of downtown Bloomington highlighting various resources, a map of Connect Transit bus routes, and other information. The McLean County Jail has partnerships with Oxford House, which offers self-run and self-supported homes for individuals in recovery from a substance use disorder. It also works with Chestnut Health Systems, the Center for Human Services, and Carl Bromed Medical Center for other behavioral health needs inmates may need upon their release. We try to set up as many appointments directly before they leave us. Abundant Thrift and area churches are also on hand to provide clothing, food, and other commissary items to inmates as they are being released. However, Mathis said housing continues to be the biggest challenge of the reentry process. Also on the front page, Pope vows to unify Catholic Church from the Vatican City. Pope Leo XIV, history's first American pope, vowed Sunday to work for unity so that the Catholic Church becomes a symbol of peace in the world, offering a message of communion during an inaugural Mass in St. Peter's Square before an estimated 200,000 pilgrims, presidents, patriarchs, and princes. Leo officially opened his pontificate by taking his first Popemobile tour through the piazza, a rite of passage that has become synonymous with the papacy's global reach and mediatic draw. The 69-year-old Augustinian missionary smiled and waved from the back of the truck to people waving U.S., Peruvian, and other national flags and stopped to bless some babies in the crowd. During the Mass, Leo appeared to choke up when the two potent symbols of the papacy were placed on him, the lamb's wool stole over his shoulders and the fisherman's ring on his finger, as if the weight of responsibility of leading the 1.4 billion strong church had just sunk in. He turned his hand to look at the ring and then clasped his hands in front of him in prayer. Vice President Vance, one of the last foreign officials to see Pope Francis before he died, led the U.S. delegation honoring the Chicago-born Leo. Vance paid his respects at the Argentine Pope's tomb after arriving in Rome late Saturday. In his homily, Leo said he wanted to be a servant to the faithful through the two dimensions of the papacy, love and unity, so that the Church could be a force for peace in the world. I would like that our first great desire be for a united church, a sign of unity and communion, which becomes a leaven for a reconciled world. In this, our time, we still see too much discord, too many wounds caused by hatred, violence, prejudice, the fear of difference, and an economic paradigm that exploits the earth's resources and marginalizes the poorest. His call for unity was significant, given the polarization in the Catholic Church in the United States and beyond. Francis's radical 12-year pontificate, which emphasized care for the poor and marginalized and disdain for the capitalistic economic system, often alienated conservatives who begged for a new pope who could pacify divisions. Leo's May 8th election, after a remarkably quick 24-hour conclave, appears to have pleased conservative Catholics who seem to appreciate his more disciplined, traditional style and Augustinian background, emphasizing core truths of Catholic doctrine. Leo drove that message home by wearing the formal red cape of the papacy, or mazzetta, to receive Vance and official government delegations after the Mass. Francis eschewed many of the formalities of the papacy as part of his simple style, but Leo's return to the traditional garb pleased conservatives and traditionalists, who cheered when he came out onto the loggia wearing the red cape on May 8th. Leo did break protocol, though, when he gave his older brother, Louis Provost, a self-described political MAGA-type bear hug in the Basilica when he and his wife came up to greet the Pope. Let us build a church founded on God's love, a sign of unity, a missionary church that opens its arms to the world, proclaims the word, allows itself to be made restless by history, and becomes a leaven of harmony for humanity, Leo said, referencing some of the themes of Francis's pontificate as well. Strict diplomatic protocol dictated the seating arrangements at the inaugural Mass, with both the United States and Peru getting front row seats thanks to Leo's dual citizenship. Vance, a Catholic convert who tangled with Francis over the Trump administration's mass migrant deportation plans, was joined by Secretary of State Rubio, who arrived in Rome ahead of time to try to advance Russia-Ukraine peace talks. Peruvian President Dina Boluarte was one of around a dozen heads of state who attended, as well as Ukrainian President Zelensky. Russia had planned to attend its culture, had planned to send its culture minister, but was represented by its ambassador. Diplomatic protocol also dictated the dress code. While most wore black, the handful of Catholic queens and princesses from Spain and Monaco wore white in a special privilege allowed them. Three dozen of the world's other Christian churches sent their own delegations. The Jewish community had a 13-member delegation, half of them rabbis. Other representatives headed Buddhist, Muslim, Zoroastrian, Hindu, Sikh, and Ian delegations. Security was tight, as it was for Francis's funeral on April 26, which drew an estimated 250,000 people. The Vatican said 200,000 were on hand Sunday in the piazza and surrounding streets, parks, and piazzas, where giant television screens and portable toilets were set up. At the end of the Mass, Leo expressed hope for negotiations to bring a just and lasting peace in Ukraine and offered prayers for the people of Gaza, children, families, elderly, who are reduced to starvation, he said. Leo made no mention of hostages taken by Hamas from southern Israel on October 7, 2023, as Francis usually did when praying for Gaza. Zelensky later had a formal audience with Leo at the Vatican and then met with Vance and Rubio at the U.S. residence in Rome. In a post on X, Zelensky said he stressed the need for a full and unconditional ceasefire as soon as possible and for diplomatic pressure on Russia until they are eager to stop the war. Susan Hansen, a professor who was born in Chicago and just arrived in Rome to teach, said she thought Leo's homily about unity would resonate in the U.S. and beyond. I think he will inspire, she said after Mass. What I particularly loved was the phrasing, unity within the doctrine of the faith, and then in love. U.S. Samaritan Ethan Menning, 21, from Omaha, Nebraska, wrapped himself in an American flag purchased at a truck stop in Iowa to celebrate. Rome always felt like home for a Catholic, but now coming here and seeing one of our own on the throne of Peter, it almost makes Jesus himself more accessible. Farmers fret over tariffs and more, from Waverly, Minnesota. Minnesota farmer Dan Glessing isn't ready to get too upset over Trump's trade wars. Farm country voted heavily for Trump last November. Now Glessing and many other farmers are taking a wait-and-see attitude toward the Republican president's disputes with China and other international markets. China normally would buy about one row out of every four of the Minnesota soybean crop and took in nearly $13 billion worth of soybeans from the U.S. as a whole last year. More than half of U.S. soybeans are exported internationally, with roughly half of those going to China, so it's a critical market. Trump last month raised U.S. tariffs on products from China to 145%, and China retaliated with 125%. But the recent announcement of a 90-day truce between the two countries backed up the reluctance of many farmers to hit the panic button. More good news came in an updated forecast from the U.S. Department of Agriculture on Monday that projected higher corn exports and only slightly lower corn prices. The report also predicted somewhat lower soybean exports, but higher domestic consumption, resulting in higher prices. Soybean futures surged. After he finished planting his soybean crop on Monday, Gleslin said he was excited by the news and hopes to see more progress. But he said he wasn't really surprised. On a bright sunny day last week, as he began planting soybeans, Gleslin said tariffs were only one of the things he was worried about, and not necessarily the biggest. Farming, after all, is an enterprise built on loose soil, the whims of weather, and other uncontrollable factors. Am I concerned about tariffs? Yeah, I mean, there's uncertainty that comes with that. Is that the number one driving factor in these poor commodity prices the last 2 years? No. Perhaps more skeptical than Gleslin is Matt Griggs, one of many soybean farmers in Tennessee paying close attention to the trade war. On Monday, he said the ripple effects on farmers might still be coming. We're only on a 90-day pause. Who knows what's going to come after that? Even something that might seem like good news, ideal planting conditions across much of the Midwest, has its downside. The potential for bigger crops sent prices downward. High interest rates, seed, and fertilizer costs pose additional challenges. There's so many other factors besides just tariffs and my market price. But Gleslin said he was encouraged by that morning's news of trade deal with the United Kingdom and said he hopes the current uncertainty in talks with China and other countries ultimately leads to better trade deals going forward. Gleslin finished planting his corn the day before on the other half of a field that he rents from his father's cousin, split between 45 acres of corn and 45 acres of beans. It's at the farm where his grandfather grew up and is part of the approximately 700 acres he plants on average. He locked in those planting decisions months earlier as he made deals for seeds, fertilizer, and other supplies. Back on his home farm, closer to Waverly, where his late grandfather's house, made of local bricks, still stands, and a cacophony of house sparrows' songs filled the air, Gleslin was pleased to spot the first signs of corn he had planted there about 10 days earlier poking above the soil. Waverly is about an hour west of Minneapolis. Its most famous resident was Democratic former Vice President Hubert Humphrey. It's in the congressional district represented by Republican House Majority Whip Tom Emmer. Gleslin's post as president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau puts him in close touch with other influential politicians, too. He and his wife, Sina, were Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar's guests at the Capitol for Trump's inauguration in January. Gleslin declined to say who he voted for. The Gleslins have four kids, milk about 75 dairy cows, and grow corn, soybeans, and alfalfa on a combination of parcels they own or rent. He uses the alfalfa and corn primarily to feed his cows. He sells his soybeans to a processing plant in Mankato, where some of them become soybean meal he adds to his animal feed. The milk from his cows goes to a co-op cheese plant in Letchfield that sells internationally. Because Gleslin has local buyers locked in and doesn't directly export his crops, he's partially cushioned from the volatility of world markets. But he's quick to point out that everything in the agricultural economy is interconnected. On his farm near Humboldt, Tennessee, roughly midway between Memphis and Nashville, Griggs weathered the 2018 trade war during Trump's first term and said he feels more prepared this time around. And from the local page, Oberheim Tournament rallies family support. From Forsyth, Riley Upperman's family has been next-door neighbors of the Oberheim family forever, she said. We do everything together. When Kelsey Washburn, niece of fallen police officer Chris Oberheim, organized a memorial baseball tournament in his honor, held this weekend in Forsyth Park, the family asked Upperman to sing the national anthem at the opening ceremony. I feel honored they asked me, she said. It was very special. The Decatur Police Department Honor Guard Clinton Babb, Jordan Gerard, and Salvador Ruiz, with Decatur Fire Department bagpiper Jason Nolan, and a group of police officers representing several Central Illinois departments, also took part in the opening ceremony. Oberheim died after being shot in the line of duty on May 19, 2021, during a response to a domestic disturbance at a Champaign apartment complex. Oberheim, a Decatur native, had moved to Champaign after first serving as an officer in the Decatur Police Department. He was awarded two Medals of Valor during his career, and since his death, a section of Interstate 72 has been named in his honor, a wiffle ball tournament named for him. His family has received letters from both former President Biden and Trump, and Monticello City Council named a park after him. The baseball tournament this weekend was held in cooperation with ILCOPS, an organization that supports fallen officers' families, not just immediately after the death, but as long as they need it, said Vice President Mike McTeague. When a line-of-duty death occurs in the state of Illinois, we deploy to assist the family and the agency in navigating the grief journey. A lot of departments and families are in shock, so we come in to help navigate that. We also provide peer support and hands-on programming for our families, and we're with our families not only during that period of time, but forever. It's the family we wish we never had, being a survivor myself. McTeague, also a law enforcement officer, lost his partner in the line of duty. Chris was involved in baseball from the time he was in T-ball until he was out of college. He played for Lincoln College. We felt that baseball would be the best way to remember him. He also coached his daughter's softball team, said Hannah Wright, the eldest of Oberheim's four daughters. It's amazing to see that 4 years later, people are still honoring my dad, especially with baseball. He coached our teams from when I was 7 years old, and also coached my sisters and played baseball throughout high school and when he was in college, and it's amazing to see them honoring him in a way that's not just him being a police officer, but for his personal life too. Jonathan Offerman had two sons playing in the tournament and said he was impressed by the size of the event and the reason behind it. It's hard to believe it's been 4 years, he said. Small baseball players in uniform converged on the park with games that started on Friday night and continued through Saturday and Sunday. The Clinton Ambush, made up of first and second grade players, includes a player whose father is a police officer, so the cause was close to their hearts. We've got a lot of friends here, so it was great for the boys after their game to hang out with their friends and play. It's been a really fun time for them. And I got to hit a home run, said Cam Getzelman, 8. Paw Prints Ministries also attended with several handlers and their comfort dogs, including Lab Mix Joy and her human Carrie Manchlick, who has been with the ministry for 5 years. Joy is a 12-year-old rescue, and her favorite thing in the world is being petted, so she was in her element. One of our things is I have a son-in-law who's applying to be in the police force, so it's touching for me to see all of this, too. We really enjoy our community. We support our police force. We're here to support our community, and we're just here to give love. Truck hits church, three kids hurt, from Palos Park. Three children were being treated at Christ Hospital in Oak Lawn Friday after the driver of a pickup truck crashed into a church in Palos Park early Friday evening. According to Palos Park police, the driver was eastbound on McCarthy Road shortly after 4:30 p.m. when he apparently suffered a medical emergency and veered off 123rd Street, crossed 86th Avenue and into the parking lot of the Episcopal Church of the Transfiguration before crashing into the building. Police said investigators were with the families of three children at Christ Hospital in Oak Lawn who were being treated for their injuries. The driver of the pickup truck was taken to Palos Northwestern with Palos Park officers. Police said one church staff member suffered a medical emergency while the fire department was on the scene, and she was taken to Palos Northwestern. Two Palos Park police officers were hospitalized for inhalation of smoke and construction debris while trying to get to the children inside the church. Palos Park police and village staff are working with the church staff and other agencies during the active investigation. Third Sunday Market returns. The Third Sunday Market, a decades-old tradition that attracts vendors, shoppers, and collectors from across the region, returned in fine style for 2025. An estimated 450 vendors were part of the event that drew thousands to the Interstate Center, 1106 Interstate Drive on the city's west side. Founded in 1988, the event offers a sprawling array of antiques, collectibles, crafts, food, and garden items. This year's other markets are scheduled for 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. on August 17th, September 21st, October 19th, and November 16th. Admission is $7. For more information and updates, check online. Three officers shot in Metro East, suspect in custody, state police investigating from Fairview Heights. Three officers from a Metro East Police Department were shot while responding to a call for services. Fairview Heights Police Chief Steve Johnson said officers were dispatched at 9:44 p.m. in response to a report of a suspicious individual prowling around a residence in suburban St. Clair County community. Upon making contact with the person, arriving officers found it was a possible domestic situation. Johnson said the suspect, about whom no identifying details were shared, opened fire on the officers, three of whom were struck by gunfire. One officer underwent emergency surgery after being shot in the face and was in critical but stable condition Sunday. A second officer was undergoing treatment for a gunshot wound in the arm that also led to a broken bone. A third officer was apparently shot in the back, but a bulletproof vest stopped the bullet. This officer was treated and released. Two others were treated and released from injuries they sustained while fighting the suspect. The suspect is in custody and the gun was recovered. Illinois State Police are leading the investigation because of the department's direct involvement. If it is your way, we ask for prayers for these officers, Johnson said. They went on a call for service to help people and keep people safe. They ended up being shot and fighting for their lives for doing their job. Indy 500 on pace for a sellout, which means there could be a local TV blackout from Indianapolis. The Indianapolis 500 is expected to be sold out, and the local blackout will be lifted so fans in the area unable to attend can watch it live. It will be the first grandstand sellout since 2016, the 100th running of the Indy 500. If the grandstands don't reach capacity, Indianapolis Motor Speedway implements a local television blackout in which the race can only be watched inside the city later that day on replay. The expected sellout was announced Friday by IndyCar and IMS President Doug Bowles, who said, "We are within four digits in terms of tickets remaining, and we want to get that out now. So those fans that were thinking about coming, they've got a few hours to get that done." Indianapolis Motor Speedway has 232,000 grandstand seats. The Speedway has another 20,000 suite tickets, 12,000 employees on race day, and an untold number of those who watch from the infield. You can see how quickly we get to that 350,000 number. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, May 19th. Please stay tuned.